First, in a world where nearly anything can be bought on the internet at the click of a button and delivered in a day or two, the choice to make something by hand can really stand out. The need to make things like our own clothing, tools, and kitchenware for our survival has disappeared, but for many people, making things with their hands brings them fulfillment and joy that buying stuff just doesn't. It can be anything from building a kitchen cabinet, knitting a scarf, dyeing cloth, sewing clothes, lots of possibilities. Our next guest has been a maker for a long time and wanted to find out more about why making things still has value in our fast-changing world. Melanie Falick is an independent writer, editor, creative consultant, and lifelong maker. She's the former publishing director of STC Craft Melanie Falick Books, an imprint of Abrams, and the former editor-in-chief of Interweave Knits magazine. She's the author of several books on knitting, and her latest book is called Making a Life: Working by Hand and Discovering the Life You Are Meant to Live. Melanie, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
At the personal level, when did you first realize that there was something special about the way you felt when you were working with your hands?
Well, I grew up in a family where everybody worked with their hands, just sometimes because we needed something, sometimes because we just wanted to do something. So it was really normal. I think what really struck me in my 20s was when I became an avid knitter and I realized that not everybody was into it, that people actually thought it was a strange thing to do. And then I started to realize that things that I took for granted in my family were, you know, my mother sewed clothing. I kind of knew how to sew. I knew how to knit. You know, my father did pottery and jewelry making because they wanted to, that was unusual. I think a lot of times as you grow up and get out in the world, you find out, you know, that what happened in your family wasn't happening everywhere. So I think that was really surprising to me. And when I became a knitter and was so excited about it, I felt a little bit sorry for people who hadn't discovered it.
Well, you met in the course of researching this book a lot of people who are doing really cool stuff. We're going to meet some of them in just a bit. But I want to tackle a couple core questions that guided you, I think, through a lot of these conversations. Question one, at a really basic level, why do we want to make things with our hands? Coming out of talking with all these people, what kind of answers did you start to see to that question?
I actually think it's our evolutionary birthright. I think it's a natural instinct that our society or our culture sometimes tries to push out of us. You know, it tells us that, oh, you should consume things, or you should do things. Things have value if they make you money or if they go really quickly. And I think as a counterbalance to that, there are people many of us who feel this instinctual desire to slow down, to use our hands to make things, to use our hands to make the ordinary extraordinary. It's really a natural instinct. And I believe that we all have an instinct for creative expression very often with our hands, but we kind of get distracted by some other things that our culture tells us we should be focusing on.
One thing you talk about and others in your book talk about, and I've heard people say this, something along the lines of, when I'm working with my hands, I feel calm, or it feels therapeutic. Talk about that feeling.
Yeah, I think when I'm working with my hands, I feel grounded. I feel focused. It's a chance to relax and recalibrate. And this is when we look at evolution, making by hand used to be part of survival. You couldn't survive if you couldn't make with your hands. You needed to make tools. You needed to make shelter. You needed to make clothing. Now, at least, you know, in many places in the world, not every single one, perhaps, making by hand is not necessary for that level of physical survival. But the process of making by hand is something that is quite nourishing. I don't know a lot of makers who are doing it because they just want the finished product. They're doing it because they want the process. They want the grounding, the joy, the fulfillment that comes from that process. And people sometimes will say, I hand sew some of my clothing, and they say, oh my gosh, like, that must take so long. Like, what do you like about this? And I say, that's exactly what I like about it. It's really, really slow. I also like, and I think a lot of makers do, I mean, certainly all the people in my book, it's taking agency over your own life. You know, just because I can, with the click of a button, order something, you know, online or doesn't mean that I want to. Sometimes doing the work to get something makes you more grateful and more appreciative in the long run. So as I said before, just because something is quick or inexpensive or easy doesn't make it valuable.
We're talking to Melanie Fallick about her new book. It's called Making a Life, Working by Hand and Discovering the Life You Are Meant to Live. You can join in, by the way, at 800-642-1234. Do you make something by hand? How does it feel when you're doing it? Why do you like doing it? Or did you used to and got out of it? Or do you want to but don't know how to get into it? Call 800-642-1234. Melanie, that first question you tackle, why do we want to make things with our hands? Then the next question, why do we want to make them beautiful? There's something about not just the thing, but making it special in some way. Can you talk about that part of the story?
Yeah, again, I think it's just a natural human instinct. And my book begins with a Q&A with Ellen Dasaniaki, who's a scholar who has spent the last 50 years researching and thinking about just this subject. And she finds in her research that you can go back like hundreds of thousands of years, and there is evidence of making special. But when we make things special, we give them more meaning. So for example, you could make a pot, let's say you needed a vessel to hold something. There is an instinct to put stripes on it or flowers on it. By the same token, it's not always just making things. It could be, you know, getting dressed up in a special way for an occasion, you see it a lot in religious occasions where people wear something particular or set the table in a certain way. By doing that, they actually bring meaning and importance to it. So I think that, you know, if you analyze a lot of the things that you do, you see that you do choose to make the ordinary extraordinary to show to yourself that these things matter to you.
When I think of people doing crafts, I think of it as a solitary thing, but you've got a whole section in your book on people doing it as a communal activity, including a quilt guild, an African-American quilt guild in Oakland. Can you talk about them and how they do this together and work to pass it along to another generation?
Yeah, I think that, during the research for the book, I spent a day with the African American Quilt Guild of Oakland in one of the members' houses. And they are a special group because they're special people. And they spend a lot of time getting together and quilting together and educating the community and making quilts for good causes and being involved in art exhibitions. But I think that what they're doing speaks to something that is very broadly popular in this country and in many places abroad, which is that people want to have a reason to come together in community. And oftentimes, it's hard. Let's say you go to a cocktail party. You have kind of sometimes like awkward conversations, small talk. But imagine if you were all shared something, like you all enjoyed quilting and you had your handwork with you. Immediately, some of the social kind of nervousness fades away because you can talk to the people about what you love because you've met on those in that area of commonality. So I think that happens all over the place. And these days there are lots of knitting guilds and knitting groups and people go to shared pottery studios. And I often think when I don't actually drink coffee, but sometimes I'll go into like a local coffee shop and you see all these people sitting there at their computers and they're not necessarily interacting a lot, but they want to be social. And I think, again, that goes back to within our evolution, being social, depending on one another, being interconnected. That was and is still, I think, a way to survive. And the internet and our screens and all the things, you know, we think that, well, let me just back up for a second. These things can bring us together. The internet can help us to meet each other, but that doesn't replace the in-person connection, which we long for. And when we are makers and we can find other people in our community, or we can find them when we're traveling, it enriches our experiences.
Melanie Falick is with us. Her new book is called Making a Life, Working by Hand and Discovering the Life You Are Meant to Live. You can join in at 800-642-1234. If you are a maker of things, tell us about it. Is it a hobby for you, a job, a little of both? Why is making things by hand important to you? How do you feel when you're actually doing it? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation, maybe hear from you, coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Right now, we're picking up the conversation with Melanie Falick. Her new book is called Making a Life, Working by Hand and Discovering the Life You Are Meant to Live. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you enjoy working with your hands, whether it's woodworking, fiber arts, sewing, painting, cooking, metalworking, you name it? We want to hear your experiences, what keeps you coming back to it. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll go to our callers now. We've got Nancy on the line in Milwaukee. Nancy, hello.
Hello. I wanted to tell you that I've always been very interested in refinishing furniture. And I found that when I buy or somebody gives me a cast-off piece of furniture, to strip away whatever layers of paint or varnish have been put on that and then to refinish it, it's really a very emotionally gratifying experience, because you now have justified, again, the cutting down of the wood tree that piece of furniture was made from originally. And now that I've given it a new life, it could go on to a new person, and hopefully that person would cherish it, and maybe in the future someone else would buy it and refinish it once more. It is just very gratifying. And I also like to weave ribbons into fabric. And then I use that fabric to make beautiful throws for the sofa or pillows. I like to paint and sew.
Wow.
I think life is full of possibilities that when you're done with the end of your work day, I always worked in hospital laboratories, and when which are filled with sterile things and steel and chromium and... When I was done with that, to go home and work with my hands, it is just wonderful.
Nancy, thank you so much for calling. Melanie, sounds like she's right in touch with the spirit of your book.
Absolutely. I love everything Nancy had to say. I feel like I could sort of go on and on with all those themes. I mean, the fulfillment you get from creativity and competence, and in addition to that, these days, and doing something to help to protect the environment from all sorts of degradation. I mean, it feels great. I think most makers are surprised that there are so many people who sort of marginalize it, because it's fulfilling in so many different ways, as Nancy explained for her experience.
Nancy, thank you so much for sharing that with us. We'll go to Harry now in Rock Falls. Harry, hello.
Hi. Hey. So I am in a jug band, and jug bands are known for making their own instruments. You know, you got the wash tub bass and the washboard and stuff. So I make ukuleles out of gourds. And I'm actually working at, Rob, this is for you. I'm working on a saxophone.
No way.
Yeah, I'm working on a saxophone out of a gourd, but I haven't quite got the double curve in yet. But so I'm working on it. So when I get it, I'll send it to you. So,
Harry, thank you so much. That's great. I play saxophone. Melanie is what he was referring to there. I'd love to try that gourd saxophone. That's a unique thing I've never heard of, Melanie. And a lot of the people you talk to, you just met so many people who did such a wide variety of different kinds of things. The list is almost endless, isn't it?
It really is. I remember that it used to be that just about everything that you wanted that didn't occur in nature was made by hand. you know, it's fascinating. Where I live, there's a man who makes string instruments, and you know, you look at them and you think, oh my gosh, like it doesn't even occur to you how it's made until you meet somebody who actually does it and can see what they do or talk to them about what they do. And you know, I would love to see those ukuleles and saxophones. when I was working on the book, I had an experience where I was meeting with shoemakers, and I realized, you know, even being so focused on making by hand, that I had kind of just taken it for granted, like how shoes were made. And, you know, once you have the opportunity to learn some techniques about how you make something, you really appreciate what others do for you and what machines do for you. And you can make educated decisions about what you want to make yourself or consume. So it really enriches your experience in a lot of different ways.
Thanks a lot for the call, Harry. We are talking to Melanie Falik, author of the new book, Making a Life, Working by Hand and Discovering the Life You Are Meant to Live. Back to your calls now. Mary is with us in Greendale. Mary, hello.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. One of the things that I'm really interested in is the makers movement. And a lot of people that I talk to really don't even know what that is about. Here in Milwaukee, they have a big warehouse. They oftentimes have conferences over, I think it was actually downtown this last year. And it's just a big trend towards getting back to using your hands. And what I'm very interested in is how crafting and making things by hand and doing all of those things do equate to child development. My kids all started pretty much crafting as soon as they were able to pick up a pencil or a crayon. And whether it's painting rocks or, you know, knitting or weaving or whatever it was they were interested in, I think it's so important that kids go out and use their imagination. And even if they can do it outside, I personally go to an art group every week. There's some lovely ladies that all meet once a week. It's as social of a time as it is an art time. We have a fantastic teacher who is actually an art therapist, retired, and it is fantastic.
Mary, thank you so much. You've given us so much to work with there. Melly, let's start with the kids and the idea of getting kids involved in making in whatever form.
Yeah, I agree with Mary. It's a making by hand, being creative. That's a very important part of child development. And it's interesting because we really encourage our kids to make things with their hands up to a certain point. You know, we encourage them to finger paint. We encourage them to make clay bookends. We encourage them to make costumes and sing and dance. And then at a certain point in our educational system, we kind of start to halt it and say, oh, these other things are more important, these more serious subjects. And it has never made sense to me. I think that when you are learning to do things on your own, with your own hands, you are stretching your imagination. You're learning about problem solving. You're learning all sorts of skills that are important for your development. And this kind of going back to what Mary said about the maker movement, and some people define that in a way that is also brings in technology and the idea of kind of making things that involve technology. And I think it's all related. I'm not saying like, oh, we should push aside technology. But, you know, when kids are learning how to, you know, like make machines or make computer programs, but they're not just using a screen and pressing buttons, but they're using like hands-on activities and experience and feeling things and hearing things and using all of their senses, then they are developing important skills and also developing competence and confidence. And all of that can be applied in all aspects of their lives in a positive way.
Mary, thanks a lot for the call. Melanie, in our last couple of minutes, I want to talk about inspiration for those of us who don't make. You mentioned the shoemakers group, and you shared the story in your book of the woman who started it, who said to, I think her boyfriend in her 20s, you know, when I retire, I want to learn to make shoes. And her boyfriend said, well, why wait 40, 50 years? Why not do it now? For those people thinking, yeah, maybe someday, can you give us some encouragement on how to make someday today?
Yeah. I always encourage people to just sit down and make a list of all the things that the whispers in their head say that they want to do. Like, do you want to learn how to make pickles, or do you want to learn how to do watercolors, or do you want to just spend more time doing pottery and you already know how to do it? But listen to what the voice inside of you has said and write it down. Write it down on a piece of paper with a pen or a pencil, and look at your book, or look at your, not your book, look at what you've written down, look at your paper. And then when you're faced with certain decisions about what you're going to do with your time, maybe just in the nooks and crannies of your life, maybe you'll sort of go to the knitting group meeting down the street from you instead of watching Netflix, or instead of starting to go through your Instagram feed. Or maybe you'll just doodle on a piece of paper, or maybe you'll put your watercolors on your desk so that when you need a break, instead of, you know, going surfing the internet, you might just get your brush and do watercolors for 5 minutes. I think, though, we often say, oh, I don't have time for that. But I think a lot of times it has to do with priorities. And we can, even if it has to be just in a small way, incorporate these things that we feel in our bones we want to do. And then bit by bit, we might be able to have that grow and have it and be able to find more time for it.
Fantastic advice, Melanie. Thanks for joining us, and thanks for the inspiration.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
That's Melanie Falick. Her latest book is called Making a Life, Working by Hand and Discovering the Life You Are Meant to Live. You can still share your stories of making things by hand over on the Ideas Network Facebook page.